It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, gross domestic product went up in the latest numbers, but is that enough to avoid a recession? Our next guest gives us insight on the new GDP report, plus the latest on inflation, employment, and interest rates. First, recent weeks have seen a rise of prominent figures sharing anti-Semitic views. The rapper Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, has posted anti-Jewish statements on social media and stood by those comments in interviews. His statements connect to anti-Jewish conspiracy theories, and some anti-Semitic hate groups have used his name in their propaganda. Some Republican candidates running for office in other states have been accused of anti-Semitic comments and ties to anti-Semitic figures, and in Wisconsin, UW-Madison and UW-Lacrosse have seen anti-Semitic vandalism on their campuses. This uptick in public anti-Semitism has Jewish leaders across the country worried about safety. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this recent rise in public statements of anti-Semitism? Have you experienced yourself? Do you see possible ways to turn things around? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Miriam Rosenzweig is president and CEO of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation. Miriam, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on and bringing this issue to light with your viewers.
Now,
listeners.
Sure. Kanye West got a lot of attention after these comments, but you've been tracking concerns about rising public anti-Semitic actions and statements for some time now. What were you seeing before this all hit the headlines?
Well, we have seen through the work of the JCRC, the Jewish Council Relations Council, we have seen a steady rise of anti-Semitism and dramatically an increase since 2016. In fact, we've seen over a 450% increase of anti-Semitic acts and an increase in the severity and violence of them over the last 6 years.
What kind of things are we talking about here? What kind of incidents are you most concerned about?
Well, the most obvious one that I could point to is that I never imagined that in my lifetime we would be talking about the safety and security of Jews in America. But just last week, we commemorated the four-year anniversary of the Tree of Life Synagogue massacre, where 11 people's lives were taken simply for exercising their right to worship. And I think that in general, my concern is just the overall atmosphere that we're in. We are seeing this rise in anti-Semitism. We are seeing the rise in overall hate speech, in demonization of all minorities. And that is a very dangerous environment for all of us.
Something that struck me in long-term numbers from the Anti-Defamation League, when they survey the population as a whole about anti-Semitic stereotypes, they find a general decline in the population. But they're seeing the same things you're talking about with more severe, more public, more prominent acts of anti-Semitism. What do you think accounts for that, I don't know, that emergence of these public actions, even as maybe the general population is getting seeing less anti-Jewish sentiment?
Well, what's interesting is the other stat is that only 18% of the total incidents that occurred were reported by extremists, which means that 82% of them were done by regular people, someone on the spectrum that we would call normal. That is a great opportunity for education and change, but it also means that there are anti-Semitic tropes. And I will say again, I think it certainly bleeds out onto all other forms of hate that have been so ingrained and repeated that they've been normalized. And that only provides opportunity to reinforce those notions and those stereotypes and of the othering of different minority communities.
Now, when we see a public figure, a well-known musical artist like Kanye West, very publicly sharing these views, promoting conspiracy theories, targeting Jews, what kind of impact do you worry about?
Well, the first part of what was so dangerous about what Kanye did is that he's a public figure. Many people follow him, and he was playing into conspiracy theories that are so old, this notion that Jews have secret power and that Jews use it for evil to take down other people. And that is a uniquely Jewish stereotype and Jewish trope that has been used over the years. But with his influence and his ability to spread this message and then double down, we saw an immediate impact of that. You saw it a few days later with the signs over the highway in LA. We've seen it on our college campuses where we've seen Kanye was right. But I think the most disturbing part of Kanye's comments versus other anti-Semitic comments that we've heard is that he actually had a call to action and he had a call for violence against Jewish people. And I think that is really what set it apart from all other comments that we've heard over the last few years.
We're talking to Miriam Rosenzweig, president and CEO of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, talking about anti-Semitism, more acts of anti-Semitic violence and statements, some from high profile figures in pop culture and elsewhere. You can join in with your thoughts, your solutions, maybe your questions for our guest, your own personal experiences at 800-642-1234. How worried are you? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Miriam, a few moments ago, you mentioned the opportunity for education and outreach to the people who might not be, you know, hardcore members of a hate group. What kind of opportunities do you see there to reach out to them?
Well, I think we have a lot of opportunities. It's one of the distinctions of anti-Semitism that we see it on the political left and the political right. And then we see these messages being echoed out. But as I mentioned earlier, whenever you're looking at a rise in anti-Semitism, this should be a sign to us that things are going on, because I've never met someone who is vehemently anti-Semitic, but lover of all other minority groups and is welcoming and accepting of people who are not like them. The opportunity is to always come together, to name when we see acts of prejudice, when we see acts of racism, when we see acts of anti-Semitism, to name it publicly, to educate, to come together and start shifting this trend of extremism that has been growing in our community. Now, there is all programming that is happening all year round, but I want to share the idea of community supporting each other. We saw this when the COVID vaccine came out, when the COVID virus came out, and there was a lot of anti-Asian hate. And it took communities that were outside of the Asian community to stand up and say, this is unacceptable, this is dangerous. And we had to stand together. And I think that's the opportunity here, is for the different groups to come together and say, this is not good for anyone. And that extremist rhetoric is intended to divide us. It is intended to other us, even within the different minority groups. There are incredible programs happening all around the city. We have a program with United Way that is called Partnership Milwaukee, Partnership MKE, in which leaders from different parts of the community come together to study the different demographics of the entire ecosystem of Milwaukee. And we learn about racism, and we learn about the impact of women in the workforce, and we learn about anti-Semitism, and we learn about the experiences of others, to humanize the experience, to know what to look for, and to become allies. There's a lot of work happening through schools, whether it is programmed through the JCRC called Hours Against Hate. We also have a Holocaust Education Resource Center that is helping with curriculums for utilizing the Holocaust to understand hate and to understand how other genocides came forth. And we also have a Jewish Museum of Milwaukee, which I invite everyone to come and to meet Jewish Milwaukee and Jewish Wisconsin, rather than just have a mythical figure that's coming out of stereotypes.
We're talking to Milwaukee Jewish Federation President and CEO Miriam Rosenzweig about high-profile cases of anti-Semitism, in some cases from prominent public figures. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen examples, concerns of anti-Semitism in your own community? What do you think of the response we've seen to Kanye West's anti-Semitic remarks and others out there? Do you have some kind of group in your community where people from, as Miriam was just saying, different backgrounds get together, learn about each other and the challenges you face, and maybe support one another? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Miriam Rosenzweig, President and CEO of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, with us today to talk about recent anti-Semitic messaging from the rapper Ye, formerly Kanye West, and other prominent figures, how to push back against it, and wider concerns about anti-Semitism and how to prevent it, how to call it to account. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have if you're Jewish yourself? How are you dealing with the anti-Semitism you may be seeing in the news, maybe in your own community? What questions do you have for our guest? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Anita is with us in Lindenhurst, Illinois. Anita, hi.
Hi.
Yeah,
I just had a question and a comment. My question is for Kanye, and does anyone really know how he developed his hatred for Jews, or did it come about with the advent of Pete Davidson? And my comment is that he should be educated to understand that at the beginning of the civil rights fight, that had it not been for the Jewish protesters and the Jewish people that supported, it wouldn't have gone nearly as well as it did. They were essential. And I'm not Jewish, but I was there. I saw it. And he really needs to dial it back and understand the actual history of civil rights and the part that the Jews played in it.
Anita, thanks for the call. Anita, pointing toward a point in history, Miriam, where you had that kind of mutual support you were talking about between two different groups.
Yeah. So first of all, I think it's important for us to name that the last thing that Kanye did was his anti-Semitic remarks, but he has said remarks that were very hurtful to the Black community. He has said remarks that have been very hurtful for minorities. And this is, he has been growing this sort of ideology of his, and I can't specify for him, but I do know that there was a moment in time where our Jewish community and our Black community were much closer, and it was in the best interest of white supremacists to divide our communities and to instill notions of anti-Semitism or anti-Blackness within both communities. And it's something that we have to watch out for and come together and name that we are reinforcing the supremacist ideology when we hang on to the stereotypes of the other communities.
Anita, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Miriam, Anita brought up the source of Kanye's anti-Semitism. Now, there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there in the world. They're very prominent today, and so many different conspiracy theories end up either right at the outset or merging into anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Can you talk about a little of the recent history of that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think you pointed to one of the distinctions of anti-Semitism versus other prejudice. Deborah Lipstadt, who is now the special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism, she has a few criteria of what makes anti-Semitism a little bit different. And actually, her first one is this notion of conspiracy. It's this idea that there are culprits to blame for something that is threatening, and that those are subscribed to the Jewish community, something that's not familiar. We knew this over centuries. In the 1500s, the rumor was that the Jewish community started the Black Plague that took over Europe. And we saw that with COVID-19, where all of these conspiracies around the Jewish community and flyers blaming the Jewish community for these for this virus, for the vaccine, and for perpetuating it. You know, she says the other differentiator is that, unlike other prejudice, if we think about the hate that is spewed towards people of color in our community, it's really to push them down. It's to say that they are dehumanized, that they are not like us, that they are incapable. Whereas with anti-Semitism, it's often punching up, and it's sort of, you know, creating the Jew as more powerful and more educated and craftier. And they sound like, well, why would that be a bad thing to say that Jews are more educated? But the idea is that it all comes together in order to create this bad environment and do something bad to the non-Jew.
Thanks again, Anita. So, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Thanks again, Anita, for calling in at 800-642-1234. Talking to Miriam Rosenzweig, president and CEO of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, talking about rising incidents of anti-Semitism and some high-profile comments from public figures, well-known, famous people. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, reactions, and comments. And speaking of reactions, Miriam, we saw, for example, the company Adidas, after a pause, cutting ties with Kanye West after these comments came out on social media and elsewhere. What do you think about that response? Companies in particular distancing themselves from high-profile figures who do things like this.
Well, I certainly think that it was a response to the public outcry, and I do think that it was greater because of the direct call for violence. But I would say that it's an opportunity for us to look and ask ourselves, why did it take this long, given the history of Kanye's words and viewpoints?
On, you mentioned some of your local efforts in the Milwaukee area. Are there things you'd like to see political figures across the spectrum do to try to turn the heat down here and try to discourage anti-Semitism?
Yes. The most important thing is that I would like to see corporations, government institutions include anti-Semitism in their DEI work, to not separate it and not dismiss it. Unless it gets to violence. And I think that would be the most important push that we would have in a call to policy into looking at everyone's, all the programs that they put together, all the policies that they put together, and make sure that they are including anti-Semitism, including the Jewish community. I would also say that in Wisconsin, we have a smaller Jewish community than in some of the other states. And so I invite you to reach out to the Jewish Federation or the Jewish Museum or the Holocaust Education Resource Center or a JCRC, and we will happily come to you, whether you're a business or a school or an organization. If you want to learn about the Jewish community, if you want to learn about the rise of anti-Semitism, if you would love to learn about the many wonderful things that are happening in the Jewish community, we would love to be a resource.
What are you seeing here in Wisconsin in particular when it comes to anti-Semitic incidents and or encouraging signs from people, from other organizations in the state?
Well, we've seen a steady increase every year in anti-Semitic acts. And I will say, matching national trends, they are getting younger and younger. We used to be talking about only college campuses, and then we're talking about high schools. And now we're talking about events happening in middle schools. And that's coming from kids overhearing their parents. It's not because a seventh grader has inherently anti-Semitic thoughts. But just in the last few weeks, we've seen incidents in UW-Madison and in La Crosse. We have seen the Kenosha. There were flyers calling for conspiracy theories about the Jewish community and COVID. There were bricks thrown into a window in a Racine synagogue last month. And so we've just seen a lot happen. And at the same time, we have seen a outpouring of support when we reached out and to connect with the UW system, 50 organizations from across different parts of the Wisconsin fabric came together and stood with us. And the UW system was very responsive in wanting to continue the conversation and learn about the impact and the environment for students. So while there are really frightening numbers, we are seeing other groups and other communities come together and recognize that hate targeted against any group is detrimental to all of us.
One relatively new wrinkle in all of this is, of course, the internet and social media. Do you have thoughts for parents out there who don't want their kids to show up at middle school and high school spouting anti-Semitism or doing anti-Semitic graffiti, to help them avoid, you know, the cesspools of anti-Semitism and other hate on the internet, and to help inoculate them against that?
Well, if I could inoculate people against hate on social media, I would have many more answers in the world. I actually think that parents have to recognize that it's out there and that they can't shield their kids. And so really it's the conversations that they're bringing home and helping their children recognize what is hate speech, whether it's anti-Semitism or racism, anti-immigrant. I mean, pick the group, but it's really the same concept of teaching them how to filter through what they're seeing on social media, because we are no longer in a space where we could say that anybody is safe from that unless they're really not turning on any of the social media mediums.
Now, unfortunately, around election times in recent years, we've seen upticks in incidents of hate. What are you watching for now that we're a week out from Election Day? Do you have concerns?
Well, we always worry whenever there's social and economic turbulence. We tend to see a rise in anti-Semitism and anti-immigrants and any minority group. And so we are definitely watching it. And we have also watched the normalization of hate speech over the last few years. And that is most concerning to us. And we want to make sure that we are encouraging our communities to think about when they're voting, not just to think about what their priorities are, but thinking about the community that we want to live in, the world that we want to live in. If we're only focusing on our own, we are going to end up more divided. And it plays into what the extremists want us to believe.
Miriam, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for shedding a light on this today.
That's Miriam Rosenzweig, president and CEO of the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, with us today to respond to recent examples of anti-Semitism from high-profile figures, including the rapper Ye, formerly known as Kanye West. Coming up after the news, are we experiencing economic growth or heading into a recession? We'll look at the latest increase in gross domestic product, plus inflation and employment numbers, and what they all mean for you. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll take a look at the state of the economy. First, Republicans around the country are focusing on crime ahead of this month's midterm elections. And Eric Toney, the Republican running for Wisconsin Attorney General, is no different. Sarah Lear has more on Toney's campaign.
At many of his campaign events, Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney surrounds himself with uniforms. An October news conference outside Wisconsin's Department of Justice was no different. Flanked by the Republican sheriffs for Dodge and Washington counties, Toney accused Democratic Attorney General Josh Call of mismanaging the DOJ.
We need people that are going to be serious about public safety, not just giving it lip service, and that's why I'm law enforcement's choice for Attorney General.
Although the face-off between Call and Toney is getting less attention than this year's races for governor in the U.S. Senate, the Attorney General's office is hugely consequential. Issues like abortion rights, election integrity, and voter access are at the forefront. It's a job often referred to as the state's top cop. Although that label isn't wholly accurate, says John Blakeman, a political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point.
In terms of actually fighting crime, no, there's very little role or minimal role for the attorney general to play. But working in the larger realm of crime policy, the attorney general can have a lot of impact.
Blakeman says it's rare for attorneys general to take on criminal prosecutions, with the exception of high-profile cases. Much of the job is on the civil side, like enforcing consumer and environmental protection laws. But in a year when many Republican voters rank crime as a top concern, Toney is leaning into the top cop label. He's called on the legislature to expand the attorney general's authority by giving the office the power to prosecute more crimes in Milwaukee County, cases that would otherwise be handled by local prosecutors.
When we look at Milwaukee, we know that crime in Milwaukee spreads across Wisconsin, and that's why we direct those resources to protecting Milwaukee, and it protects all of Wisconsin.
Recently, Toney has used his position as district attorney to prosecute 8 people for voter fraud. That includes people who were charged for registering to vote with a UPS address instead of the required residential address. Some election law experts have criticized the prosecutions as overly aggressive, but Toney says he's upholding the integrity of the system. At the same time, Tony acknowledges the legitimacy of Joe Biden's win in 2020.
I've been the most vocal statewide Republican candidate saying we cannot decertify and should not attempt to decertify the election here in Wisconsin, and that there was no widespread voter fraud that would have overturned the results of the election.
Call, a former federal prosecutor, has focused on other issues, attacking Tony for saying he would enforce a 19th century Wisconsin law that bans abortions unless they're done to save a pregnant woman's life. And during a debate last month, Call contended that enforcing those restrictions would divert the DOJ's focus from fighting crime.
We always have to make decisions about where we're putting our resources. I believe they should go to investigating and prosecuting homicides, sexual assaults, drug trafficking cases, the most serious crimes in the state. My opponent has been clear that he believes those resources should go towards going after people for abortions.
Call has said he won't enforce the abortion ban, and his DOJ is suing to try and block it. Tony accuses Call of playing politics.
The lawmaking belongs with the legislature, not an activist judge or an activist attorney general. Our job is to enforce the rule of law.
This summer, Tony squeezed out a win in the Republican primary by less than 3,000 votes. Since then, he's continued to tout crime-fighting credentials from his time as prosecutor. And next week, voters will decide whether that's enough to make him Wisconsin's next attorney general. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
We'll talk with Eric Tony tomorrow on Central Time. You can find a WPR news story about incumbent Attorney General Josh Call at WPR.org, and he'll join us for a conversation here in just a bit. Now, the Commerce Department released its third quarterly report last Thursday that showed the gross domestic product in the U.S. increased by an annualized rate of 2.6% between July and September. Those numbers suggest economic growth, and President Biden said in a statement that, quote, our economic recovery is continuing to power forward. But that increase comes after two quarters of a slight decline. Then there's the ongoing concern about global inflation. Solid job numbers all the while. We're taking a look at all the positives and negatives in economic news. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Which bit of economic news affects your life the most? Do you think we're headed for a recession? Why or why not? Do you want to see the Federal Reserve keep boosting interest rates in order to bring down inflation, even if it risks a recession? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Kevin Barros, professor of finance at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, also chief analyst for the Center for Business and Economic Insight. Kevin, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, thanks a lot. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, some of the newest news is this GDP report. Can you remind us, what does the gross domestic product actually measure?
It is the value of goods and services produced in a time period. It's typically measured either on a quarterly basis or on an annual basis. It's pretty much usually an annualized figure that you get from the quarterly release. So the 2.6%, that's basically saying that on an annualized basis, third quarter growth was 2.6% of goods and services for the United States.
Now, the last couple of these reports were down a bit, but it seemed like some economists were saying, well, that's not as bad as it looks. Now it's up some, and economists are saying, well, that's not as good as it looks on the face of it. So what is it? Matt, is that where we are, basically?
Well, it's kind of like forecasting the weather. It might rain or it might not rain. But if you look at really what's been going on this year, the first quarter results for the GDP, it was a negative GDP growth. But that one was kind of it was very unusual in that leading the negative side of that was a large influx of imports. And imports were kind of jacked up in the first quarter. You had supply chain issues to try to overcome that. In addition to that, the war between Russia and the Ukraine. So there was almost like upfronting of imports that occurred in the first quarter. And imports basically reduce or have a negative impact on U.S. economic growth because money is leaving the country as opposed to being spent in the country. So the first quarter was kind of almost, you could say, an anomaly. What has been going on since really the second quarter and into the third quarter has been a drop in investment spending, and that's commercial investment, residential investment in buildings, also in inventories. But personal consumption remains to be on the positive side. So that's really where you kind of get the mixed bag. Personal consumption remains positive. Investment is negative. And so it's, you know, sort of a plus and sort of a minus.
All right, now personal consumption staying up. It seems a little weird because we've had inflation going on. We're globally, I think, 107th highest inflation. We're in the middle of the pack, but it's noticeable. But we're still buying stuff. And I'm reading today companies are looking at that and saying, hey, we bumped up our prices. Our costs might be going down, but people are willing to pay $5 for this box of cereal. We'll keep charging it. Could you talk about what's happening with inflation?
Yeah, inflation is it's kind of tough right now in terms of not only what consumers have to pay. Inflation still came in at 8.2% in the last month. So the Federal Reserve is trying to raise, or they're not trying, they're going to raise interest rates. You can look for what's expected to be about 0.75 point bump in interest rates tomorrow, and then probably another 50 basis point increase in December. That's going to put interest rates at a level roughly what they were back in 2006, 2007, not quite at 5%, but you're approaching 5%. The problem is, although the Federal Reserve tries to raise interest rates, lower consumer borrowing, and consequently decrease the demand for products, some of the products that have had some of the largest price increases really aren't sensitive to increases in interest rates. Food at home has gone up 13%. Well, that's not really tied into an increase in interest rates. It's kind of tied into the fact that people have to eat. So what's basically been driving the increase in food prices? Well, it's been a combination of things. It's not low interest rate. It's not low interest rates. It's not government spending, but fertilizer prices were up significantly. Russia's supplies 15% of global exports of fertilizer. So that contributed to the spike for the increase in fertilizer prices this year. You also have Russia and the Ukraine combined accounting for 30% of global exports of wheat. Wheat prices went up about 50% between the beginning of the year and summer. Then they backed off significantly because there was a UN brokered deal with Russia to again allow grain products to flow from the Ukraine. However, Russia backed out of that in the last couple of days. So as a result, wheat futures have again spiked up between about 5 to 10% in the last couple of days. So food prices are up, not really tied to an increase in interest rates. If you look at automobile prices in the last year, they've gone up by 9.4%. Again, that's, although it could be tight, if interest rates go up, you could see a decrease in consumer demand. But that increase in automobile prices has really been tied to the supply side. Automobile sales basically peaked in April 2021 before you had the supply chain problems. Since April 2021, vehicle sales have basically declined 25%, yet prices are up 15%. And it's related to the supply chain, the shortage of semiconductor chips. Another big area for price increases over the last 12 months, it's medical care services. So you've got some things going on that the Federal Reserve can try to, I mean, if you increase interest rates, yes, it's going to reduce consumer borrowing and demand overall, but there are some significant price increases to products that just are not interest rate sensitive.
Right. We're seeing the Federal Reserve in the U.S. try to bring down inflation with interest rates. We're seeing, you know, the European equivalent doing that and the British equivalent and so on. How much of this is a global problem that we in one particular country may not have a lot of control over?
It's a huge global problem, and a lot of it really kind of ties to what's happened globally. And a lot of it is... I should say a significant portion is really related to what's going on with Russia and the Ukraine. You've had fertilizer prices go up. You've had wheat prices go up. You've had energy prices go up. But if you look at inflation, 30-year highs for Canada, they're right now at about 7%. For Australia, they're right now at about 7%. The euro area is flirting with about 10%. So what the United States is facing, and it's not the result of government spending, to blame it on any political party is not appropriate because, again, it's a global issue. If it was just what was going on in the United States affecting inflation, then you would not see it globally. It's a global issue because global factors have played into the increase in prices.
Talking to Kevin Barr, professor of finance at UW-Stevens Point, joining us to talk about new gross domestic product numbers showing some economic growth with a lot of yes and yes, but, and so on. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on where the economy is going? Coming up, we'll look at job numbers. Are you able to find a job? Were you able to find one if you were looking for one? Are you able to find employees if you're looking for them? Call in with your thoughts and questions about the economy, inflation, employment, and more. 800-642-1234 is your number. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Kevin Barr, professor of finance at UW-Stevens Point, with us to talk about a report from the Commerce Department that shows an increase in the latest quarter in GDP, gross domestic product, a big measurement of the economy, but not all great news out there. There's still inflation staying up high, but wait, employment looking pretty good. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How is the current state of the economy affecting you? Are you worried about what the next few months, the next year might hold? Do you have questions about what's driving inflation, labor shortages, and more? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Kevin, through all of this, unemployment staying pretty low. The newest numbers out today now show an increase in job openings, it looks like. What's going on there?
The labor market has just really been hot. Right now, we have 153 million Americans employed. That is more than at any other time in the history of the United States. Job openings, it's down a little bit from, say, a few months ago, but it's still at a very high level. So the labor market continues to be very hot. And that's one of the things that the Federal Reserve is watching very closely, and they'd really like to cool off. Wage increases, what they look at is basically a three-month average. The most recent information of last month was that on an annualized basis, wages have gone up 6.2%. Well, that's dropped a little bit from the previous month, but still, that is at a high rate that the Federal Reserve is watching. And for the Federal Reserve, it's at too high of a rate. So they really would like to see the labor market cool off, but the labor market's been hot.
Now, when businesses are surveyed, it looks like a lot of them are worried about a recession. And you would think they might start cutting the number of people working for them. And you see some businesses doing that, but obviously, overall, that doesn't seem to be happening. Why aren't companies starting to cut workforce?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to some of your initial comments when we kind of kicked this off, and that is, consumer spending has not decreased. I mean, if you look at the first, the second, and the third quarter, personal consumption has increased each month. So people still are going out there and spending money. So until a decrease occurs, the labor market probably will not weaken too much.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Paul is with us in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hi, Rob. Love your show.
Thanks.
I wanted to just say I wish somehow, and we know things that are sensational are the things that get our attention. And we've got a war going on over in Europe. We just got over a pandemic. And it sort of breaks my heart that politics, because people need votes, we stir up the stuff that makes it horrible. And yes, food is more expensive. Gas is more expensive. But there are good reasons for it. And I really look forward to things sort of more the optimistic approach, you know, as long as we have what we need, right?
Paul, thanks for the call. Paul looking for, I think, a longer view, Kevin. I mean, I don't know if we have a lot of great precedents, but, you know, thinking back to a World War One and an influenza outbreak, how long does it take after big shocks like this for the economy to get back to normalish? Are you there, Kevin? Talking to Kevin Barr, professor of finance at UW-Stevens Point. I don't know if we lost our connection there. Waiting for word here. In the meantime, you can join in with your calls at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kevin, do we have you now? I'm wondering if he's muted, maybe, if you are, Kevin. No? Okay. I think let's reestablish a connection. I will promote. We've got an interview. We're doing a series of candidate interviews in the race for Attorney General. We'll have current incumbent Attorney General Josh Call coming up for a conversation in just a little bit. And challenger Republican Eric Toney will be joining the show tomorrow. You can email right now if you have a question for the candidates for Attorney General. Key law and law enforcement position here in Wisconsin. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or you could tweet us at Central Time WPR. Still trying to reestablish that connection with our guest. Okay, I think Kevin, do we have you?
Yes, you okay. Do. Sorry about that, Rob. For whatever reason, the connection went down.
That's the internet sometimes. Okay, so the question on the table, Kevin, from our caller was, hey, can we take a long view? How long, if we have precedent for this, how long does it take to recover from things like a pandemic and the ongoing war in Europe and get the economy back to normalish?
Well, one I think big factor you just said is that ongoing war in Europe. That has, again, it's created a lot of turmoil when it comes to energy. It's created a lot of turmoil when it comes to commodity prices, to agricultural prices. So that's the big question mark. When is the war between Russia and Ukraine going to end? As far as energy prices have come down. Oil prices have come down. They peaked at about $130 a barrel earlier this year. It's back down to about 90. So oil prices have come down. They obviously are still quite a bit higher than what they were a couple of years ago. But that being said, as far as oil production has increased significantly in the last couple of years after dropping significantly because of the pandemic. Back in 2020, oil production was down about a third in early 2020 just because the price of oil declined significantly. That's come back. Profitability for oil companies has been huge. So hopefully oil production should continue to improve, and that should help energy prices in the future. And the kind of holdover from supply chain issues, I think for most companies, they're expecting that the supply chain should continue to improve, and that by the hopefully by the end of 2023, supply chain issues aren't around anymore. I think the big thing, though, is still going to be the war in the Ukraine, if that's going on or if that's ended. That would have a major impact on, depending, of course, how it ends, but that could have a major impact on bringing sort of things back to normal.
Now, the dream, the hope for the Federal Reserve is that they can raise the interest rates, bring down inflation, and not trigger a recession. I won't ask you to predict whether or not they're going to be successful, but what, Kevin, are the key factors that may, you think, determine whether or not they can accomplish that inflation goal without slipping into recession?
Well, personally, I think one of the big factors is just food prices, because the food prices, I mean, food is something that people have to buy. I mean, if a shirt goes up, or, you know, a dress goes up by 10%, 15%, well, you can back off and decide not to buy that. Food, obviously, not so much. That's something that you have to have. So the Federal Reserve can increase interest rates to kind of back off the demand for certain products. But it's kind of like, as we talked before, some of these products aren't interest rate sensitive. So if you get behind what's driving the increase in the cost, be it new car prices, be it medical costs, be it food costs, if those factors can't subside to bring prices down, that combined with the increase in interest rates by the Federal Reserve, I mean, for example, you raise interest rates, that's definitely going to cool off the housing market. So all those factors combined can lower inflation. But again, it's more than just increasing interest rates. I mean, it's looking at other factors that affect the pricing, as we've talked about, and how that war has impacted commodity prices, agricultural prices, and energy prices. So it's kind of looking at factors that have influenced the prices of these: food prices, medical care, automobile prices.
Kevin, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Kevin Barr, professor of finance at UW Stevens Point. He's chief analyst for the Center for Business and Economic Insight. Kevin joined us today to talk about the latest economic news, pro and con. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, to learn about efforts around Wisconsin to boost adult literacy and join the conversation with your own questions, maybe your own experiences. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 8. You can listen online at WPR.org on the radio or on the radio here on the Ideas Network. Yesterday on the show, we listened back to a conversation about reading and literacy and how to help kids starting at an early age. And you called in with some of your own stories. Mark from Dressler said technology today can help kids with literacy. He used it to teach his son reading and letters. It's helped him be an advanced reader at age 4.5. Mark says you do need to limit what they're exposed to, but it can be a very helpful tool. Frankie from Milton said she used closed captions on television to help teach her grandsons to read it, let them identify and practice the words they were hearing out loud. Dell from Fond du Lac County said her family had National Geographic magazines delivered to her house for over 40 years, said the pictures kept her kids engaged with learning the words inside. And Jean in Menasha said with the pandemic, she used Zoom. She bought multiple copies of books, gave some to the kids, kept some herself, and they read together online and turned the pages at the same time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.